right after the news that Virginia Governor Ralph Northam awkwardly denied ever doing blackface in college, racist caricatures of African Americans continue to pop up in the news as designers and entertainers, including Katy Perry, were accused of trying to profit off racist images.
As surprised as most folks were that these designer duds were starring in their own minstrel show, some folks were even more shocked that Katy Perry even has a fashion line. Today, comedian Matt Brown joins us to take a look at why in 2019 we are still wrestling with folks showing up in blackface.
Listen as we talk about black fishing on social media, tanorexia, and the amazing African-American artists who had incredible careers despite living in a hostile world.
Plus, a new book says 80% of Catholic priests are gay men in the closet who are too afraid to speak up.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people like you. Thank you. Right now, we need your help. After many years of creating podcasts and videos you love, our dear computer can't take it anymore and is ready to go to the great big recycling bin in the sky. It is heartbreaking to be in this situation.
Visit GoFundMe.com/Feast of Fun Computer right now and give any amount. Help us reach our goal of saving the show's podcasting computer. Every dollar you give goes directly into making Feast of Fun last for years to come. We know we can count on you to make a big difference and continue the show. Thank you for loving Feast of Fun.
Thank you very much. Once again, the link is GoFundMe.com/Feast of Fun Computer.
Mark, why do you think racism is like an onion?
What? Because it smells?
Because you didn't dice it up and put it in your breakfast tacos?
Because it grows underground?
Because of the layers.
Because of the layers. You just peel it back and there's one more layer of racism underneath that. You think you've solved it and you're like, oh no, there's more.
I'm a little bit aghast because I'm interested in American culture.
Yes.
And politics. And it's impossible to talk about American culture and politics without really understanding African-American culture.
Clearly.
And politics. African-American culture and politics is American culture and politics. And so if you think you're an expert in one but not the other, then you're just an ignorant fool.
I personally believe that what defines American culture has been black culture, gay culture, or queer culture is the nice word now, but I don't like that word, so I don't use
you
it
like
to
queer?
Describe myself. No, I don't like that word. That's something you like yell at me when you have like skull potato tobacco stuck in your jaw and you're just like queer.
That's what use in the universities now.
Queer. That's what I hear. you can say whatever you want, but I hear queer.
Okay.
And so I don't like that word. Mm-hmm. But
they use queer in Turkey, except they spell it K W IR or something.
The first guy I ever let fuck me in the ass was from Turkey.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So our guest today is comedian Matt Brown.
Tangential by nature, Matt Brown.
Which is of multiple heritages.
Just two.
And black and white.
Basically, Miss Thang.
But to say that you're just black and white oversimplifies your experience and your background.
Basically, because she light-skinned too.
And gay.
And poor.
And gender non-binary. And
well,
like to wear
I wouldn't go all that far. I just like to wear makeup on stage. I'm not a binary they, them, like LGBTQIA, HBO, Gozo, Amazon Prime.
Okay.
I don't.
Oh, are you like a Drag Race contestant that for years says she's not trans, even though she presents as female everywhere?
Okay, so this is going to happen. I'm going to wear makeup to every show in my entire stand-up career. Be like, I'm a gay man with too much spare time. It's not that serious. It's not that serious. And then like 15 years from now, I'm just going to come on Feast of Fun and debut my vagina.
There's a little bit of you and me and everything LGBT, honey.
Basically.
And if you don't acknowledge the cosmic connection we all have with each other, then you're missing out on the flavor.
Fausto, you're going to be the first person to see my pussy, I promise you. If I ever get one, you're the first person that gets to see it.
I've seen vaginas before, like, you know, both, you know, made by nature and made by
doctors. Mm-hmm. Okay, now did you see the ones that were made by doctors after the swelling had gone down?
A little, yeah. So like a day or two afterwards.
No, you gotta wait for like a couple months and let it, you know, look like the way it's gonna live her life.
Well, then it's
we like saw it the same one, right? Yeah. I thought I was like, I don't know what. I'm not an expert.
It looked very architectural. Yeah. It looked like it was something. It was structured. And
yeah,
designed.
Because it's all puffy. Because I also know a thing or two about trans pussy. You're not gonna get to find out how, but I'll let you guess. And yeah, no, you gotta wait like several months for the swelling to go down once they get used to the dilators. Because once it's like fresh off the fucking surgical table, like it honestly, no, you can't. No, that's not what it's gonna look like. Wait, that's not how she's gonna look.
Guys, let me put my foot down here. What? Let's talk about blackface.
Not about trans vagina. Sorry.
The elephant in the room that no one likes to talk about. It's ironic here because it is a difficult thing to talk about, even with progressive, loving, open-minded people like ourselves.
We're avoiding the topic to go to something much more palatable, like trans women's vaginas. That's how hard blackface is to talk
about.
Let's
break this up out. So the governor of Virginia may or may not have been photographed in blackface in a college yearbook. And then he's denying it, but not quite denying it. Then the attorney general, then Republicans dug up a photo of what may have been Bill and Hillary Clinton.
What clearly is not.
Which clearly is not, but they were able to find a couple that somewhat resembles Bill and Hillary Clinton.
So any white people in Arkansas between 1970 and 1990.
And then Gucci came out with a sweater that basically makes you look like you're in blackface. If you bring the neckline over your face.
You literally, it's a gorgeous black sweater, but then like you pull the turtleneck up and you're like wearing full on minstrel lips. Mm-hmm.
Then Katy Perry has her line of shoes that looks like a racist Mr. Potato Head.
Mm-hmm. And the only reason it looks racist is because they didn't change the nose. Because they kept the nose to be white, like they kept the nose on all the shoes to be light beige. Mm-hmm. So it looks like blackface because it looks like you forgot a part or something. And then the big red lips don't help either.
And then Joy Behar recently.
She on The View said, you know, what? I'm in blackface too, and everybody. It just seems like everyone is talking about it or is designing products for blackface. It's
a renaissance.
Everyone's talking about it right now.
The African American Studies major in me is coming out right now.
Yeah.
Because I just wrote a giant paper on this like last semester. The reason it's coming back is because everything that's original always, it like refuses to die. Mm-hmm. Like an original idea never goes anywhere because energy can't be created.
Or destroyed.
Exactly. And minstrelsy and like blackface is the only indigenous American form of theater. It's the only type of live performance that that was created here that doesn't exist anywhere else and that was maintained here and that stayed here.
Well,
that was 200 years of that. Like,
I mean, you can argue that vaudeville, that you know,
and minstrelsy preceded that,
and vaudeville
minstrelsy started in 1780, 1790,
is interwoven with each other. But you know, that the concept of blackface actually can be traced to pantomime arts in France, and the idea of painting your face white to erase your identity so you can be this universal construct. So as a clown or as a mime, you can express yourself in universal ways of happiness, sadness, you know, scared or joy. Mm-hmm. With blackface, the idea was to humiliate or subjugate a group of people by painting yourself in a universal construct of black. Mm-hmm. And so all these, you would call it grassroots artists of early American culture in vaudeville stages were putting on this stuff to present as black, but also African-American performers also took on those characters and that type of presentation so they could gain access to performing for mainstream audiences.
And they were probably light skin underneath that because you had to look like that to get the job, but then you had to look like that on stage to keep it.
Would you argue that someone like Stephen Fetchett or Willie Best, who best known as Sleep and Eat, were light skinned because they didn't strike me as light skinned.
I'm just saying that to bring about the just historical relevancy that makes people have always had a better time of it. And especially in entertainment. I don't know what was happening back in 1812. There weren't no pictures of that. No one is bringing out the Dorio type to the vaudeville.
So why are so many, you know, I can understand like somebody in their stupid youth made a bad decision. You know, we live in a racist world. Racism is part of us.
We've all slept with a black guy.
We all had some black dick in us or on, you know,
or on the rag.
But the question here is, Why is a multi-million-dollar company that is designing products like Gucci or Katy Perry's fashion line releasing products?
Katy Perry's fashion line is a multi-thousand-dollar company. Yeah. Let's calm down.
Hey, you know, why are they doing this? Jessica Simpson built an empire, and she's not even talented. She's a billionaire from her clothing line.
People, answer the question. Why are they doing this?
I think they're doing this because they know that they can. Because they purely know that they can. It's like the ultimate of white privilege is the invisibility of it.
So because they can, what are they trying to accomplish by doing this?
It is like a reinstatement of white power. Just by doing that and being able to get away with that in broadside, it's just like, yeah, we're still in charge. It's like why I think poor like black kids in college have to write really sad scholarship essays to rich people to get money. It's like they need to know that they're still on top. Like, everyone needs the proof that it's still going their way. And so if you have all these white decision makers with no one black in the room to say that's fucking preposterous, or no one who is black and feels empowered to be able to say that's fucking preposterous because they're the only one in the room and they'd like to keep their job.
Because there are African-American people in these companies seeing these products being proposed, being manufactured, and have not said, I'm putting my foot down. You're not going to put this on the shelf because I care about my company and I want my company to have a positive public image. And this just makes us look like idiots.
And the other thing that people kind of tend to forget in labor markets is that a lot of the times the reason why, because people always say, oh, women aren't very ambitious or black people aren't very ambitious or like minorities just aren't really like they don't want to get ahead. Well, it's because as a minority, when as a woman or a racial minority, as you move up in any company, you also become more isolated. Because if you're a straight white guy, you'd be moving up and then you'd be moving into more circles of people like you. But if you're a black woman or if you're a Latino dude or if you're a Korean woman and then you go into these circles, you just become more and more isolated and there's less people like you as you move up. So there's like less desire to want to deal with all
that.
Well,
if you're dealing with money, there's a lot of people just thankful that they're in this very lucrative job and they don't want to rock the boat.
And so if they're one of the three people of color at that level in the bureaucracy, maybe they would feel more comfortable just shutting the fuck up.
Well, and also too, I wouldn't put it past them to kind of intentionally put something like this out just because they know it will cause some kind of waves. And it's one of those things. It's shoes. It's really kind of in many ways walking the line for a lot of people because they're just like, well, is it blackface or is it not blackface? That kind of thing. And then we just issue an apology. Nobody's going to really worry too much about it. And plus they'll finally discover that, hey, guess what? Katy Perry sells clothes. Who knew?
Okay, but here's the thing. Doing that design on the shoes differently to avoid the problem, it would have been so easy. If it was just eyes, no one would have cared. If it was just the big red lips, no one would have cared. If they had let the nose match the background of the shoe, no one would have cared. There's like so many different ways to be able to fix it. There has to be some intention of making a scene.
Well, and also, too, you know, they show pictures of those the two shoes, but it came in many colors. Colors, you know, and one of the colors was nude. So,
which Fausto, what color's nude?
White people, transparent.
White people. That's what color nude is.
Well, yeah, and when you, I think that the debate there is really you can give it to Johnson & Johnson, who made Band-Aids
and flesh.
They call it the flesh or the care, you know, pantyhose, or it's this idea that, and this is actually Shea Coulee on this podcast talked about it. We were saying, like, are white peaches racist? Or we were talking about, like, white produce.
White eggplants.
White eggplants and stuff like that, you know. Are they racist or not?
I'm not putting it in my ass.
And Shea Coulee had a really good idea about this. She said, the problem is when we think the default mode is white, that ain't right.
There you go.
That's the idea, is that we're treating something as a universal default mode as being somebody's privilege over another person.
Oh, absolutely.
As opposed to saying, you know, this is light skin, this is dark skin. From coming from a Latin American culture, we think of skin and race in terms of shades of light and dark.
Yeah, you do.
And the problem with that is that and this is a video that's been shared on the internet a lot, is that Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and Brazilians and Cubans, no matter how dark your skin is, mm-hmm. you're not black.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite of the 1% rule,
mm-hmm.
right? In the United States, mm-hmm. if you have 1% black blood, you're black.
Yeah.
In Latin America, if you have 1% white blood, you're not black.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's still the same idea. It's this like, it's this discomfort, this unhappiness in loving and embracing and tenderly caring about your African heritage.
Absolutely. It's because of the Anglophilia of the culture that we're raised sure. to be in. We feel very hostile towards anything black on default.
We don't know anything.
We don't know how
about...
to love it. We don't know how to love it. And we don't know how to hold it close and sure. say you're special.
But I think in this crisis or this, you know, tragedy, there are some extraordinary people and artists who survive some horrible times. Mm-hmm. You know, someone like Stefan Fetchett or Willie Best were two entertainers who loved to perform for audiences. And amazingly, at a time where a lot of people of color couldn't even, you know, had access to the same bathrooms or drinking fountains mm-hmm. that were seen as second class citizens, they were featured in films and made a pretty comfortable living,
mm-hmm.
You know, for the time period, for their perspective, from their vantage point,
yeah.
As actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to transcend some really rotten Hattie McDaniel, you know?
Like, I want to challenge the narrative, though, that it's a transcendence thing, because just because these people are brilliant performers and they're successful performers and they make money, don't mean that they're, like, immune to racism in their day-to-day life.
Of course not.
But
we don't even know their names. People think of that. When you think of minstrel, you'll think of Al Jolson, which was a white actor.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even, you know, and Spike Lee made this brilliant film called Bamboozled that mm-hmm. really examines very deeply what happens in modern times when we allow these harmful, destructive ideas to take hold.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a TV program that doesn't want to present nuanced portrayals of African Americans, that they want this very cheap, cliched look mm-hmm. at what the black experience is. And mm-hmm. so, you know, Spike Lee did this really great film, and a lot of people didn't even know about this film, and that it was actually based on actual people that lived.
Wow.
And so I think with all this stuff that's going on, we're hearing so many people talking about, oh, I used to be in blackface, or I covered my skin this, you know, but no one's talking about the actual individual, the artist, the culture, the history of people who, you know, managed to exist.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know anything
because
about them.
Because when it comes back down to the academic, the academification of anything that has to do with black, sure. it always becomes about... Because I always say, like, I'm a sociology and African-American studies double major, mm-hmm. but it's really sociology and then, like, the studies of biracial and white-passing people. Like, because that's always what it's about. That's always what it's about. Because when you bring it academic,
yeah. sure.
it's all about you don't study African-American studies. You don't study what it was like for the slaves when they got here. You study what white people felt. Mm-hmm. And what they're like, it's a study of white opinion and white sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And then it's always about mm-hmm. like, oh, these poor mixed people.
Who are your favorite passing for white black folks?
None of them.
None of them?
Fuck them all. No. Because, okay, I really cannot stand when like light skinned people and mixed people want to whine about how hard everything is. When it's like, have you ever thought about how hard it would be if you looked like either of your parents? Just a thought. Like, I mean, being authentically black and having dark skin and coarse hair is really, really tough fucking road in this country. And like, I can bitch and moan and groan over how I had it, but I know that if my eyes were brown instead of green, I'd get a lot less sexual attention. And I know that if I was two shades darker, like a lot of my other friends who have a white mom and a black dad, I would have gotten treated a lot differently in a lot of different places. Mm. So like, you just, I don't know. It's too much not awareness of your privilege.
The gift that we are given by having families of many heritages inside of us. That's a gift.
It's something.
You don't seem striking
the white part of me gives me ringworm. That's where I'm at on that side of my heritage.
You know,
I'm just itchy.
I'm really grateful that I have. And if you look at my parents, you know, it's like my mother was born in Mexico from a Texas family. Mm-hmm. She has like this cultural heritage in the southeast of the United States and northern Mexico. My father was born and raised in Puerto Rico many generations, and we don't even know where his family came from. And Puerto Rico has like, you know, Portuguese, African, German, native blood all running there. Yeah. And it's like, I come from an extremely rich heritage of so many different kinds of people, and I'm very grateful to have that in my life. And I think, you know, for people who look at that and see that as a form of weakness, I feel a lot of compassion for them, because in some regard, and I hope that's not how you feel about this, is, you know, we are given a gift to be able to see things from to experience and taste and feel things from a wide variety of perspectives. I hope we can.
You think because you're 8% Portuguese, you see the world through a different color?
At least I have.
Reach out and touch somebody's hand. I think
the idea is that you're given the opportunity to see things differently. Whether you choose to do so, whether that's a limitation, that's a different story there.
Okay.
But we're starting from a place where we're able to talk to our parents and say, what was life like for you?
Well, you come from a different culture, which is much different than American culture.
Yeah. And I think that's a gift to, you know, so for people who, you know, like that football player and his wife.
Oh, Jesus.
Who posted on social media, and they were like, and to me, I was just like, it really broke my heart to
Jaleel
see.
Ade.
But that's so common.
What were their names?
Jaleel Ade and his fiance, Lindsay, held up their son, Zion. And they're like, here's to more light skinned kids.
It's fucking disgusting. But that's how a lot of black people in this country are. A lot of black people in this country choose not to reproduce with other black people because they want to have lighter kids, because it's easier to be ambiguous than it is to be identifiably black, or because, you know, it's seen as dark skin seen as masculine. It's,
you don't think that the parents are just making a bad decision? I'm hoping that these parents are making just a bad decision in the way they phrase that they love their children, and they love their children no matter
Absolutely not. We come out of 400 years of slavery, and then who knows what in West Africa before that. There is way too much psychological trauma in there for that to not be part and parcel of it. It comes from saying shit like that. Like, here's to more light-skinned kids. I refuse to give birth to myself. I refuse to give birth to myself and anything that looks like me. Here's to more kids that are half of what I am. It's like proving, it's the proof of the white supremacy. It's saying I don't love me. It's saying I hate me. It's saying I don't want to give birth to me. And it's saying that I don't even have the right to live.
In the 80s, Oprah would have people on the show, like dark-skinned black folks versus like white, lighter-skinned black folks, and talking about how, like, I would not want my son dating a woman that dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in front of the whole audience. So people are like, what's the big deal? But to them, it was a big deal.
I'm interested to see how my family reacts to my boyfriend.
Yeah?
I'm interested because I haven't met him yet. Because it's only been, like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months? I don't know.
And your boyfriend is pretty dark?
No, my boyfriend is dark-skinned black. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you be introducing him to your white family or to your black family?
I would be introducing him to my white family.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be introducing him to my sister and her husband. And they're like, they're not racist. They're chill. They like, they have a black child like that. And I've taught them how to do her hair and raise her. Okay. So like,
your sister's white.
My sister's white. Yeah. And so is my mom. So like, it's just like, I know that the way, like, let's say if I were to take him to Thanksgiving with my sister's husband's family, like what I did, I feel like maybe because they're a step removed and not that they're bad people. They're nice people. I had a really good time. They liked me. But just like the way that they would react to a 33-year-old dark-skinned black man from the west side of Chicago versus moi, because I'm fucking Diana Ross with no wig. Like, I'm not threatening to anyone, never have been. Like, I'm literally like Vanessa Williams with a bad perm, like, and all her hair fell out. Like, there's nothing, you know? Like, I feel like they would interact with that and just like immediately just have a different visceral sensation about that.
You're the Will Smith of comedians. Everybody likes you.
Basically, and it's
because you're not threatening to them.
It's not my fault I'm cute. I can't do anything about it. I can't. I really can't.
So
you could throw some acid on your face.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, I just
my
don't.
Hall.
What? Sorry, just, you were talking.
It makes me a little sad to hear you say that. I don't feel like my family is going to embrace this lovely man that I'm in love with just because of his skin color.
Oh, they don't like me. No. Yeah.
Are you sure it's a black thing and not a gay thing?
I'm absolutely positive it was a black thing because It was a black thing before it was ever a gay thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
And where are they coming? Why do you say that your family doesn't like you?
Well, it's just like uncles and like and just like the way that they would treat me And the way like I was related to in regards to others. Mm-hmm. Like I was just always separate and I was just not looked at the same way.
Would you say you were the black sheep of the family?
A little bit. Yeah. I was the mixed sheep. I was the black sheep. I was just not regarded as the same thing.
You were the outsider because of your skin color.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they weren't just like white people. They were like rednecky, middle of nowhere, country white people, mm-hmm. which is like a whole different subtle white supremacist thing on its own.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, for the vast majority of my family, we're very progressive people. But then there's a side of my mother's brother's family mm-hmm. who are all like right-wing Christian fundamentalist Trump mm-hmm. supporters.
Yeah.
But their kids are all artists and musicians and very liberal and progressive.
Probably gay.
And probably, They got married, you know, so, and these are
kids. There's some hope for anal.
And these are kids who are, you know, they're somewhat, I see them as my own children, you know, it's like, I love them dearly and I mm-hmm. celebrate them and I, you know.
You gain 30 pounds when each of them were born.
Yeah. And to me, to see them, their parents just be these, you know, right-wing, conservative, fundamentalist people, you know, it makes me really sad because I know that's driving a wedge between me and mm-hmm. those kids. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's like, you know, just because they're not where I'm at does not mean that I cannot have a healthy relationship with the members of my family who do want to be part of my life.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think someone should have to like you back for you to love them. I think that's mm-hmm. preposterous. I don't think that makes any sense. There are a lot of people.
But can we send that message out to the world? Because I don't think a lot of people grasp that or understand what that means.
You don't have to disassociate with the whole family just because there's a couple people who aren't fucking with you. You don't have to throw away the entire barrel just because a couple rotten apples.
And when you have a lot of heritage,
gonna die soon.
When when part of your family comes from one color and another part of the world and another part of the world, there is going to be a lot of heartache and sadness in that family. It's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that do not let that rob you from being close to your family, to understand who your family is. That's why I think all this like DNA testing, like who am I, 23andMe bullshit, which by the way, they've done studies. All that DNA testing is just you selling your DNA information to pharmaceutical companies so they can make drugs for you in the future and own your basically DNA patent.
I hope they give me the drugs.
It has nothing to do, like, I guess that they sent identical twins DNA.
And those markedly different.
And they were like, you're from Russia, you're from China, you're from whatever, you know, it's like they were just throwing shit at them.
I did two different companies and it came back the same.
Oh, really?
That's good.
They might use, I wonder if they send them to the same third party. You never know.
Ooh. Right? And the thing about it is, if you send, even if you're like me, I'm like, I will never get a DNA test on my heritage because it doesn't affect me. I'm not going to be, you know, it doesn't affect me how I love the world and the world loves me or I know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if I had a cousin
black, I'll be nicer to you.
That's like Diane Warren. But the thing about it is, it's like if you have a family member or a cousin or somebody who's done that stupid DNA test, you might as well have done it yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's all connected.
Yeah. And so to me, it's like I think this whole heat wave with blackface is a golden opportunity to do something better, to grow better. And I want people to talk about solutions. I want to talk about what is it that we don't know that we need to start doing.
You know what I really think can make all the white people stop doing blackface?
What's that?
Is if, and this, we could do a whole episode about her.
Who?
This idea comes from my friend Kola Boof, who is like an Egyptian Sudanese novelist who is like abducted by by Osama bin Laden for like 6 months and shit in Morocco. It was wild. She wrote a whole book about it.
Wait, you have a friend?
Yeah.
Who was abducted for real by Osama bin Laden?
Swear to God, she wrote like 80 pages in her autobiography about it. Yeah. there. Okay. Her name's Cola Boof. She's fabulous. Follow her on Twitter. You'll learn a lot. But her idea of how to get white people to stop doing blackface is that we should start telling them that they look better when they do it. Oh, baby, you look great. This is such a market improvement.
Well, did you think Joy Behar looked better when she did it?
I think she looks cute.
What about the girls on Instagram who are saying that, what is it?
They're making money that I should be.
Because they're painting themselves to be darker.
It's blackfish. Isn't that what they're calling it?
Is that, yeah, because it's catfishing? Because it's catfishing.
Blackfishing.
And yeah. So there's the one girl especially who was taking a task because she's from Sweden, mm-hmm. and she's very fair, and she's just like, oh, this is how I tan. I'm like, bitch, okay, you might have a tan, but you're also having a bronzer and you're also having some kind of spray.
It's a layer on a layer on a layer.
Layer and the makeup, and it's just like you're trying to portray yourself as, like, you know, mixed or black.
Because ultimately colorism affects women more, mm-hmm. because the same reason that anyone would say that Joy Behar looked black in her picture that she posted on The View, which if you check out the video, the only reason you'd say she looked black and that's blackface is if you think biracial is black. Because mm-hmm. she didn't look dark. She looked like she had been in the sun a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys mm-hmm. make of tanorexia and tanorexics? Like tan mom. People who just can't get black enough.
It's because they want plastic surgery and they can't afford it.
So it's part of it is just like controlling your body.
They don't
want to
look like themselves.
To tinker with it. Mm-hmm.
They do not want to look like themselves. They do not want to be who they are on the outside.
Mm.
It has nothing to do with the shade.
I always
love
that picture of your sister, Jaji, your half sister, and she's a tanorexic. And this is a picture from the 70s or 80s, and she's so dark. She looks like one of those lamps that people would have, like in the corner of the room, and like she should have a lampshade on the top of her head.
Is she full Boricua?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I think that's a loaded question, is saying someone's a pure Puerto Rican.
Well, are both of her parents Puerto Rican?
Yes, of course.
Okay, there you go.
But I think the thing about it is, it's like, you know, it's asking a Cajun person, are you pure Cajun? You know, they're going to be like, well, there's a little bit of French, a little Spanish, African, and Native, and, you know.
I know what y'all look like. Stop being fancy.
But like people look at me and they say, if I can offend other Puerto Ricans, if I go to you know, a restaurant or store mm-hmm. on the street mm-hmm. in Puerto Rico and I say, yo soy Puerto Riqueño, I am Puerto Rican, they will look at me and say, imposter.
Mm-hmm.
You Why? Do not sound, you do not look like Ricky Martin.
That's why, because you're not living La Vida Loca. You don't have kids with long hair.
I'm not living La Vida Tostones.
You do shake your ass a lot, though.
Listen, your identity, whether it be male, female, trans, non-binary, your heritage, your racial experience is for you to own, and no one can take that away from
you. Unless you're Rachel Dolezal, and I will take it away from you.
What's she up to these days?
Braiding hair.
Where does Rachel Dolezal fit into all this, like,
in
this
the trash.
Tangle
trash,
web.
Just as I thought. She fits with that.
Can we make room for someone like Rachel Dolezal? What is she? Where?
No.
Explain Rachel Dolezal to an alien. Like,
okay, if I had to explain Rachel Dolezal, I would explain her as a woman who was white, who wanted to pretend she had ancestrally been a slave.
Because why would she do that?
Because she wanted black dick.
So part of it is that she really emotionally identified with the African American struggle,
and she was doing, like, she was studying African art and
that
stuff
she
in, like,
internalized
high and college,
and
she got a whole like ride to Howard on just her fucking African art.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
they thought they were admitting like a black student, and they got her portfolio and shit, and they're just like, Becky. Like, it was, they were aghast.
Wow.
And to me, it's like, I think we want to create a space for people to define their heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, if you're a person who is saying, you know, and maybe the thing about it is that we don't have a space for someone like Rachel Dolezal to say, I'm a white woman and I'm very passionate about black
Yes, culture. There is a BET video. All those white women that
she
are
doesn't have that. She, you know, she.
But
she,
that cultural space exists. All those white women that fuck exists. Black men. All those Kardashians that pretend like they're from Ghana because they sucked three black dicks. All of them. Every single one of them. Yeah, no, that's that cultural space. Mm.
But it is.
She just happened to be from Washington and couldn't occupy it.
It's a situation where she wants to have the best of both worlds, is it?
Well, yeah. I think that there's a little bit of a mental illness.
Oh, honey,
there
she's deranged, you know, attached, disillusionment, disassociated. Yeah,
what about that German woman who's like, I've taken so much melanin that she claims that she permanently changed her race.
My coworker just texted me that article today.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. She and her husband are both white and obsessed with becoming black, and then she's pregnant, and they think that they're going to have a baby, and that they've both taken so much melanin that the baby's going to come out black.
Oh, I hope it does. Wouldn't that be great?
No.
Why not?
No, because then white people are just going to have their own black babies instead of going to Compton. And you should start adopting black in America, mm-hmm. then black from Africa, okay. then, I don't know, Aboriginal or whatever else they have for free.
So what's a good way to do blackface and get away with it?
There isn't. Buy one shade down in bronzer and blend carefully. That is as best hope I can give you.
One criticism that drag queens get all the time is that drag is blackface for women. That
It's woman worship. It is woman worship in the highest order. Blackface is not an elevated position of black people. It's saying you eat watermelon and you're like as black as a piece of furniture, and like you've got these big old stupid fucking lips. And drag is like the biggest elevation of women.
Well, I think you can certainly, with any art form, when you are portraying someone else that is not yourself as an actor, mm-hmm. as an artist, as a performer, you do run the risk of making a gross generalization of that type of person. Mm-hmm. And I think any artist, especially when it comes to drag, has to really think about, you know, sexism and injustice and racism mm-hmm. in the way they portray themselves. There's somebody whose name is Shirley Q. Licker, yes. who RuPaul was a very big fan of, and some African Americans and some racist white people were huge fans of. Mm-hmm. She was kind of one of the early internet celebrities. Okay. And for a while she was like touring and performing here. She came here to Chicago to the Laugh Factory and did a show
before
there.
It was the Laugh Factory.
Before it was the Laugh Factory.
It was Lakeshore Theater.
Lakeshore Theater. Mm-hmm. And Mark and I went to see the show, and it was uncomfortable, wasn't it?
It was awkward, especially because she didn't have her stuff memorized, you know, so it was weird. And
was she doing stand up? Was she doing?
She was kind of doing stand up, but she was asking people like, "What do you guys want me to like? What routine should I do?
What do you want to see?"
And some of the stuff was written down, so she wasn't a very good performer.
Oh, okay, you know that's her problem.
And so that was a big part of the problem. But it was also too, you know, I'd say out of how many hundreds of people were there, you know, I'd say 7 or 8% of the audience was African American, and some people laughed and thought it was funny, and other people were just like, this is so wrong. And there was a few, were there protesters outside? There was a couple of protesters outside, but this is also going back to 2001, 2002, before people could get, like, you know, activated online. I believe that they did try and bring her to Hydrate maybe 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and people were just they shut that down real quick.
This was created by Chuck Knipp, who was from the South. He was living in Canada and developed these kind of like memes, these recordings, you know. And RuPaul included a lot of Shirley Q. Licker's recordings and collaborated with her in one of her albums, mm-hmm. saying that there was a lot of love and appreciation for black culture from this white guy's perspective. I don't necessarily agree, and I think that sometimes RuPaul likes to fuck with people by breaking things that she probably
should. She loves taboos, and she likes fucking with taboos.
Yeah,
you know,
she's an anarchist.
Yes, in some ways. Yeah, she wants to.
I think
rock
she's
the
old
system.
And she has all her money, and she doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, well, this
was back in the day when she didn't have money. Yeah. She did not have the money she has today. Let's be real clear. Yeah. This is RuPaul putting her future. There was no drag race. Her future as an artist. Her career on the line, her reputation on the line.
She's putting her pussy on the line.
By embracing a blackface artist as Shirley Q. Licker.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked her about it, but she also said, listen, I have a whole song, and the whole song is nothing but the N-word over and over.
And she
over
said, again. Sang some of it on the
she
show.
She sang some of it, and we're like,
I'm
okay.
So happy.
I'm like, you know, more power to you, Ver. That's you.
But, you know, I just want to put this out
you
there.
You can buy my cover of the song
Shirley
on iTunes.
I'll do it, only it won't be censored.
Shirley Q. Licker took that interview that we had with RuPaul and edited it to make it sound like Mark and I were in support of lot of the shit that was going down. And so it was an NPR commentator who accused us of doing the opposite of what we were asking RuPaul about.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, one, Shirley Q. Licker was very disingenuous in her usage of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Two, used edited out of context to make herself seem like we and RuPaul were endorsing her when we were not.
Mm-hmm.
And three, never gave us any credit for it.
You just like
she sucks.
You want your words to be honest and credit to be given so that way people can find you and give money.
Well,
that's right.
There
speaking
you go.
Of which, our GoFundMe, where are we at right now on our GoFundMe?
Go. So listen, doing this podcast, we are in quest of telling people's stories and talking about difficult things and talking about blackface and talking about African-American culture. American culture is not always easy. There's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of injustice.
Especially for Mark.
I do have quite the burden to bear.
Your poor Norwegian ass.
Yeah.
The paleness of it in the winter.
All for Norga.
You know, listen, I'm for a white guy, I'm pretty dark.
You live that fantasy.
You know, I tan pretty well.
I'll let you have that 10% North African dream.
You know, people think that Mark is the Puerto Rican one and I'm the Norwegian one.
I tan better than he does.
Yeah, I burn.
Oh, I get dark. We can go be black together. It'll be adorable.
Wouldn't that be fun? Well, yeah. What can we do first?
Change your name to DeAndre.
DeAndre? Oh, I was going to be Anton. Can I be Anton?
No! You're not that old.
DeAndre?
Yeah, DeAndre. Okay.
And can we go to like a reggae bar? Or is that too white?
I don't have my hair grown out that long yet. Let me get some twists and we can talk about it.
Okay, can we get some ghetto fries?
Oh, please.
I'll
put anything ghetto in my mouth. Ghetto booty, ghetto fries.
Can we go to a White Sox game?
If I have to go that far south on the red line. You know, I don't believe in that.
Okay. What kind of expensive sneakers should I get?
So I can get to step into my Air Force Ones. Go old school with Nelly. Nelly was my first crush, by the way. Black History Month fact. Okay. Matt Brown's first crush is on Nelly on the Hot and Her video.
What should I do with my hair?
We get you a nice lineup.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you get something carved into it?
Maybe. We could actually shave in your part.
Wow.
Yeah, we could actually do that for you.
Okay.
Yeah, we could hook it up.
All right.
That'd be beautiful.
Anyway, back to your
plea for dollars.
I'm excited. Right now, we are so close to our goal. We are just $630 short of our goal, and
woo!
We're going to take care of a lot of our equipment problems here.
Yes, and, baby. Absolutely.
2018, 2019 is going to be fierce and fabulous because it's going to be more podcasts, more videos coming your way.
I want to make a whole web series with Matt Brown.
I do
you
too.
Should.
I do too.
You should.
Basically like the dating game where you just like basically, you know, taste black dicks.
Basically.
Only for fans.
I feel like if we could get a Patreon going and there was a check attached, I could get my boyfriend to get over it.
Okay.
And then I could just like suck black dick on Patreon. That'd be great. That'd be great.
No, seriously, like I feel
or
like we
eat
work
black
with
booty.
Some.
That'd be fun for me too.
Yeah, you like that?
Oh, that's my favorite.
Some football booty?
Yeah.
We work with some extraordinary, wonderful people that I'm so blessed to have you here, Matt.
Thank you, baby.
And to be able to, you know, share your gifts and your intellect and your wisdom and your humor with the world. And I think that's a really unusual, uncommon thing to have. And be able to do this show as we have done it for now in its 15th season happens because we've gotten the support of amazing people like the audience that listen to the show.
Mm.
Basically.
And, you know, you are the future. Well, like it or not. I like it a lot.
Children are the future.
You are the children and you are the adults. You are the people that are going to shape the world of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. If I make it past 40, I'm tired.
Have you ever even graduated from college yet?
No, I still have like a year and a half.
Oh my God.
You'll get there, baby.
I'm going to kill myself. What? it'll just be a lot
what
of
are you wanting a degree in exactly?
Sociology and African-American studies, so I can suck dick and be angry at white people at the same time.
So you're basically going after Rachel Dolezal's job.
Basically, only I'm actually going to be authentically light-skinned with a T. And
I prefer it with a T.
I know, right? Because like light-skinned is a little too Mississippi.
Right.
We're going to do light-skinned and bring it nice in Atlanta.
What's a historical figure in African-American cultural history that stands out to you that people don't know enough about?
You asked me the perfect question. Oh my God. Okay. So the person that everyone should Google, everyone should research, everyone should find out all about because she's still alive is Leontine Price. Leontyne Price.
The singer.
Yes. She was like basically the first black female superstar opera singer from like the 1960s through the 1980s. And
I know who this is.
She taught me so much. One, like back when I was singing, like about vocal technique, because nothing ever moved. Everything was crystal clear with her. And also she gave me pride in my blackness. She gave me pride in my southernness. She gave me pride in like bringing all that to like the European stuff. And you should research her because she went from literally her debut to 7 years later being the highest paid woman in the industry in like 7 years.
As an opera singer.
As an opera singer, yeah. As a black woman in 1962. When she would walk off stage, off tour in Texas, and then not be able to get a hotel room, but she just made $4,000 in one night in 1963.
When you think of black opera female opera singer, it's Leontine Price.
It's Leontine Price. It's Shirley Verrett. It's Grace Bunbury. It's a couple others, but it's Leontine Price.
And she was a pioneer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, from 1961 to 1985, when she was out there doing her thing, there was just no one better.
What was her personality like? Was she more like Maria Callas? Was she kind of a difficult, challenging, demanding person? Or was she easygoing and chill?
She was the cockiest human being. If you listen to any of her interviews, read anything that's ever written about her, she's like, if they can't handle the sound of this voice and the spread of this mouth and the size of this nose and these big black eyes, then they just don't know what they're missing out on. Aww. Like, just completely Mississippian out of her mind, and I loved it. She's just like, oh, when I opened the new Met, I didn't leave my house for a year. Just completely Mississippi crazy.
And that's what I mean about, like, talking about African-American culture, American culture.
Because it's who we all are. It's what we all come from.
We don't even know enough about Leontine Price.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is something, like, would be extraordinary. This is a whole podcast series in itself.
Should be.
It's
just
like
undersung black women who've changed all of our lives.
Mm. Yeah, for me, it's like Eartha Kitt is somebody who influenced me tremendously.
Yes.
And I'm lucky enough to have actually spent a lot of time with Eartha in person and with her daughter on this podcast.
That's amazing.
Her daughter says that...
Is her daughter white?
Well, she presents as white, and she identifies as white.
Because she is. Okay.
Yeah. But
she talked to us about it, and she said it was weird that my mother would take me to an amusement park, and then people would think like she was my nanny.
People used to think my mom was babysitting when she'd take me out in public. They'd be like, whose child is this? Yeah, no one ever thought that I belonged to my family. Mm. Yeah, no, I vibe with that.
And for me, it's like I was able to better understand who I am and be at peace with my heritage and my complexities of my existence by learning and understanding about Eartha Kitt's life. And she was, you know, Kit Shapiro, her daughter, said mom was a handful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mom was not always easy to get along with. Eartha Kitt left this world screaming.
Good.
On Christmas Day, Kit Shapiro, her daughter, said, mom, it's okay to go now. And she literally was like, ah! And then stopped, died, and that was the end of Eartha Kitt.
That is every plan I've ever had towards the end of my life. I just want to scream into oblivion.
Screaming.
Oh, absolutely. Screaming or coming?
She left
Why
this world
both?
In
oh, true.
With passion, with a zest for life.
She was rolling her R's in the last one. Arr! And then just But it's like a battery about to die.
Arr! Do you guys know the difference between a German R and a Spanish R?
Yeah.
Can you do both?
Yeah, a Spanish R is going to be more, and then a German R is more, or more.
Mark, can you do the German R?
Maybe. I'd have to say the words or something.
Like, verblieb. Verblieb.
My friend Jason can do that.
Huyket.
Eartha's growl was a German R, not a Spanish R.
Mm-hmm.
The Spanish R is on the tip of your tongue. Eartha's is from the back of your throat.
Yeah, it's from the sides of the tongue.
it's on the sides.
You're doing
of
the
because you got to do both, but it's on the sides of the tongue. Bite me.
Meow.
Speak of the Catholic
Church. Fausto's a furry.
Now you know.
He's not.
Are you sure?
He's not, but we did hook up with a furry once, which I thought was really interesting.
Did they wear the tail the whole time?
Him. No, no, no. He eventually took it off, but what's weird about him is he was a very hairy individual underneath, but he shaved it all off.
What kind of point is that if you want to be an animal?
I know, right?
Like, if you want to be a moose, just grow it out.
He was like Rachel Dolezal. For furries. He wanted to be it, but he also, deep inside, he was shaving every hair off his body because he didn't like hair. He just liked to wear a suit of hair.
Same.
It was nuts.
So, like, he had a full, long, blonde, like, length of hair, but he just wanted to wear a wig.
This is what drives me crazy. I am madly crazy. I love dogs. I love our dog, Jesse. He's a wonderful little dog.
Jesse's a sweetie.
I run into guys who are into pup play.
That's sick.
Right?
That's not Christian.
They like to pretending like they're a dog. They like to be on a leash, eating out of a dog food bowl and stuff like that. And they look at our dog and they're just like, what is this? Get this thing away from me.
I'm not into bio dogs, they would say.
I'm not into any of it. Mm. And while we're on the topic of things that disgust me, if any one more human being sends me a picture of their fucking feet on Instagram, I am going to set you and your home on fire.
Their feet?
Their feet. What the fuck? Why is everyone a foot pervert now and like all free with it and shit? Mm-hmm. I'm disgusted. I miss the good old days when you got kicked out of Payless like everybody else. Like, it's just disgusting.
Matt, do you know about the Streisand effect?
What about Barbara Streisand?
Barbara Streisand has a beachfront home in Malibu. She doesn't want anyone knowing about it. So she sued the government to stop taking pictures of her Malibu home and state, her beachfront property, as a part of the Streisand effect. Now everybody can find a photo of Barbara Streisand's home that she doesn't want people knowing exists.
So now everyone's going to send me pictures of their feet.
Exactly.
Don't send me pictures of your assholes. Listen, I'm tired of it. I don't want to see one more of them. You're ruining my day. If you spread your cheeks, my inbox one more time, my whole life is going to be over.
I'm with you on the feet thing. When they show up on my grid, like let's say on Grindr or something like that, that's an immediate block.
Oh no.
Cause it's just going to get weirder from there.
Yeah. Cause your intro's a foot,
yeah,
you're getting into piss and shit.
Yeah. That's the start. It's just going to go crazier from there.
The Vatican is having a conference on sex.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk
and
about
don't
you
get too excited.
Me.
It's not. It's gonna suck. But anyways, French sociologist journalist Friedrich Martel spent 4 years conducting 1,500 interviews for his new book, In the Closet of the Vatican, that claims that 80% of Vatican priests are gay.
Bet.
And the rest of them are even worse.
Bet.
Well, the ones that aren't gay are probably pedophiles, right?
So he says although the book does not conflate homosexuality with child sex abuse in the church, Martel claims gay priests do not want to report abuse on children because they're worried their own homosexuality and their use of sex workers will be exposed.
Oh, absolutely. Because if they're doing both, they're diddling them all.
And Mark, you're the one who said that part of the reason why conservatives and the Vatican, the church, is so anti-gay is because gay people are the first ones sound the alarm.
We'll call that shit out. We'll be like, something here is not right.
You just be like, ma'am.
We notice
and whereas like other people will just be like, oh, it couldn't possibly because it doesn't enter their mind that something like this could be happening or they're in on it.
And yeah, but we notice
these things. We know when something's off and they don't like that about us.
Yeah, no, because everyone else just wants everyone else to be straight and normal so bad that they don't let anything else enter their realm of possibility. Yeah. But we're always ready for some faction.
Well, because we're not in denial about some of that stuff.
Exactly.
You know?
And
well, we're in denial about some things, probably.
Yeah.
But we're the size of our penises,
basically.
Well, and now I guess the reports are out the penises are much smaller than we thought.
They are. Yeah. And I'm really sad.
Like the average is really only about 5 inches, whereas like they used to say it was about 6 inches.
Oh, everyone's dick's getting smaller and my life's getting worse. This is just...
It's not the size, it's what you do with it.
My boyfriend's fine.
Okay.
And besides, I'm packing heat.
You're a well-kept woman.
Well-kept in some regards. I'm still out here selling these fucking comedy shows.
still out here trying to make performing. My own dollars.
Everybody absolutely adores you. You sell out these shows.
I do.
You're packing heat.
You guys finally saw me.
You were the funniest. You were the highlight of that showcase.
Mm-hmm. I was the
and
headliner.
Everybody, mm-hmm. the headliner.
The chick was funny, too. What's her name?
Rachel Hall was a great, Rachel was a great feature great, for yeah. me.
She said, I want to come on your podcast. And I said to her, well, what do you want to talk about? And she's like, let me think about it. Then she gets back to us and says, I want to talk about Grease 2. I was like, what about the Grease 2? It's an amazing movie.
I like that idea. You know,
okay. And
you
I was
know,
like, do you have way more to say?
Judy Garland's daughter's in that movie.
She is.
Lorna Luft
is yes, in that movie.
Right.
Yeah. What does she play? A teacher or something, right? Or I don't know.
I don't know. An old Jewish woman.
It's a terrible movie, but in some ways it's really good.
Which is always the point.
Where does the pollen go?
Basically.
I want a cool rider.
Cool. I'll be your girl.
Whatever happened to Michelle Pfeiffer? Where the fuck is she?
I don't know. She turned into white gold.
I don't know.
No, she went into the microscopic universe.
Okay.
An Ant-Man.
So she's like living on a microscope slide right now?
She came back out.
Okay, nice.
She has now power. She can touch a mixed-race woman and heal her.
Mm. But what about me?
She's living her life as a hawk flying around.
Well, I'm glad that she's trans species. I allow that. Yeah,
yeah. Did you see the movie Ant-Man?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Did you see
about.
The movie Lady Hawk?
No idea what you're talking about.
She and Rutger Hauer were cursed lovers. And so she would become a hawk by day, and then he would become a wolf by night.
Doesn't
so they
she
could
give
never
off
be
bird
together.
Vibes, though?
She has like a little owl kind of face.
Yeah,
right?
Just a little bit. She basically that. Very that.
We should just do this whole podcast in bird sounds.
And well, a young Matthew leading. Broderick helps them out.
Oh, a young
to break the curse.
In what world was he ever young? He's always looked 38.
Now he looks 28. In this
I gotta tell you, I saw Matthew Broderick 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ferris Bueller. Had the whole week off. Let's just sort of
okay. He was tired.
He was at weekend, but Bernie's off.
He was tired.
Like, he did not look young.
No,
he and I was like, what 50, happened to Ferris?
50, he's 50 some years old now.
He looked like Sarah Jessica Parker wore on his nerves.
Well, listen,
she was not there at the party, by the way.
Neither of them were ever attractive, so they deserve each other.
I had a big crush on Matthew Broderick.
You're
he was
sick.
Super cute.
With
he
that
was
stupid haircut and all those Neil Simon movies, get out of my house.
I loved her in Square Pegs. She was adorable.
I have never had a positive emotion about her.
You never watched
Sex
and the
City?
I like did.
Her? Okay. Not liking it?
No, I don't like... She looks like she just recovered from some major surgery on her face through all episodes. And I'm not saying plastic surgery. She just looks like she's got a tumor extracted. Like, she's just not... Like, I don't want to look at her as the romantic lead for 6 seasons. I can't do it. Or Cynthia Nixon. Can't do it.
So, in the penultimate Drag Race All-Stars 4...
Yeah, breaking news. Sorry, we got this.
They did
from
a
CNN.
Tribute to Sex in the City.
Sex and the Kitty Girl.
And I was like,
did you watch?
No.
Are you a Drag Race fan?
No.
Why do you hate Drag Race so much?
I just have so many other things to do with my life and my vagina. Like, I really do.
So the top four is Monet Exchange. And some
Monique Hart, Trinity the Tuck Taylor,
Trinity,
and Naomi Smalls.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think it's going to be Naomi Smalls.
You think Naomi's going to get it?
I hope so.
Why do you think so?
Because I think that her dance performance has been so fantastic that it's just kind of blowing people out of the water.
Does Naomi still have the big old huge ass injected lips out
the
ears?
Even bigger, I think.
Oh no,
they're huge. They went from
Asqueroso.
Slee slugs to like pythons.
Why would you do that to yourself when you're so young and pretty?
You know, it's just bigger is better.
No, it's not.
You know,
it is an effect that we've seen. If you do well on RuPaul's Drag Race within the first 5 years, you're going to get work done on your face.
I think they force you contractually to do it.
First, the eyebrows come off.
Yeah, because that way you get unbotched eventually.
Well, because all drag queens have been ready to not look like themselves since the age of 12.
Mm.
Like, it's very like, I'm tired of me! And then just draws eyebrows on in a whole new location.
What I like about drag is that you get to, like, play with who you are, you know, like we put so much emphasis on transforming into something else. We forgot that, you know, we already are awesome, extraordinary people.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so beautiful.
And, you know, for example,
waiting for your drag career to take off.
Oh, never.
You wear eyeshadow like a goddess.
I'm so stunning. It really, it's overwhelming.
And I think you own that well. But if I ever see you wearing black lipstick, I will knock you.
My
head.
Teeth are already brown. What would I do that for? There's no.
Can we just make an agreement? What? Black lipstick belongs in the 80s and should not move into
if
this.
If you're not Grace Jones.
Yeah. Sorry.
I don't like hard and fast rules.
I am just sick of seeing anybody who wears black lipstick never looks good in it. Mm.
If you are Grace Jones, I am down. If you are not Grace Jones, I am not down.
I want to do a shout out to a guest of this the podcast, Vice Squiggly Bones, who lives in Boise, Idaho. And she's nice. Undocumented drag queen. She's a DACA queen.
Yes!
She's a dreamer. And she got dressed up as Donald mm-hmm. Trump and did a performance and thanked all the white gays in the audience for voting for her.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I'm just like, bitch, why is there not video of this?
That's hilarious.
You
know,
you should definitely have some kind of video.
Vice and, was terrified. She was actually very nervous about it. Yeah, and yeah. Even her family was like, don't do it. They're going to send you back to Mexico.
You know,
let me see that photo again.
Orange face, orange hair.
That's amazing.
When she was doing it, I joked and said, oh, you're getting ready as Donald Trump. And she was like, how'd you guess? And I was like, really, girl?
It's the orangeness.
Basically. And, yeah. That's not attractive.
And I got to say, you know, of all her looks, this is Snatch Game material. Mm-hmm. She would win Snatch Game with that.
What I think the real talent would be is if she lip synced one of his speeches for an hour, 15 minutes and got every word correct. That one really. Then I'd be like, okay, she's got something.
You know, a lot of people have remixed Donald Trump's stuff into music. So why not lip sync to that?
Well, I mean, he is the voice of a generation.
Oh,
well, a generation of MAGA
hats. The thing that's terrible is even if he doesn't win this next election is we're going to have to put up with think pieces and art pieces and musicals and movies and books about the Trump presidency till the day we die.
Oh, we have to deal with the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Till the day they die. Yeah. Mm. And it can't come soon enough, in my opinion.
If Ruth Bader Ginsburg doesn't make it to 122, there is no God. I don't know. She has to live forever.
I love Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I salute her. But she could have retired when Obama became president.
But if you could just let her be a life-changing Jewish woman in the life of all of us, would you just let her do that as a Jewish woman?
You know, she thought that she was going to be able to retire around this time. And obviously it's
she can't.
She cannot.
She owes her country.
Yeah.
This is what she went to Columbia in 1956 as the only woman in her law school for. Okay.
Yeah.
The sacrifices.
Girl, baby, we are holding strong here with Matt Brown.
We're going to send you a prayer cloth. It's going to look exactly like the lace you put in your robe, Miss Bader Ginsburg. We're going to pray over it. We're going to send it to you in D.C.
Matt Brown, you are such a treasure to
us. I am. I agree. Thank you.
One of the greatest American comedians.
Sure. That you know.
That I know of. You know. Just happy to be my friend. And
Show. In Chicago.
But I think you're actually a very important voice, and I expect great things from you. And your career one day will be so big that we'll have no contact with you.
You won't return our phone calls or texts.
If I'm lucky.
You'll Cameron Esposito us.
I don't know her. What do you think of her? I don't know her.
Who?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah. For all of the Feast of Fun audience, I just want y'all to know that while you guys are still young and beautiful and listening to me, that my Twitter and Instagram are at Matt Brown Comic. Mm. And if you guys want to see me perform, if you want to see me be young and beautiful in person, you can come see me at the Gallery Cabaret on February 16th at 7 p.m. You can come see me at Graham Cracker Comics in Lakeview on February 21st at 7 p.m. You can see me at the Hidden Shamrock on February 22nd at 9 p.m. And you can see me at Comedy Bar on February 28th at 8 p.m. Come see me live in person, never to be replicated again, and probably will talk to you if you come in the front row.
Oh, well, there you go.
God bless you, honey. Thanks, Mama.
What are you going to do for Valentine's Day with your honey?
we are gonna be really gay. He wants to fucking eat pizza, which
fucking
like,
eat pizza. Yeah,
no, but he wants to
are
fucking
you gonna fuck first, or then have.
Pizza? I don't know when the pizza's gonna happen because like Fausto's trying to tell me you should eat the pizza before. No, you should fuck first.
Have the sex before you put the cheese inside your stomach.
But I completely disagree because like I've always pulled my dipstick out clean personally. I've never had any problems checking his oil.
At least don't have sex and eat pizza at the same time.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Do whatever feels good.
In the bathroom.
You know?
Like,
fuck him through the pizza.
hold two slices of pizza together, stick my dick through it into his ass.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Let the cheese lube it up.
One on each cheek.
That's like, a spicy meatball.
Yeah, we're going to go to his favorite pizza place. Then we're going to go to his
cock and bread strings.
Oh, yes. You know. Then eat cheese off of it. Yeah, but we're going to go to his favorite pizza place. Then we're going to go to his favorite bar. And then I'm going to stick my favorite dick in his favorite ass. I bet. Probably.
Oh.
I guess. Or maybe I might be a gentleman and give it up because it's Valentine's Day.
Oh, you're going to give him anal.
I might. I might decide to be delicate and gentle in a woman.
Aw.
Aw, you're so
is
sweet.
Is that what he wants, though?
I don't know what he wants. I don't know. I'll just.
When do we get to meet you?
I'll
this
deuce just in
man?
Case.
I want to meet your boyfriend and see if he lives up to the, you know, how much you build him up.
I don't know. You both are probably going to try, like, I don't know, stick your McDonald's straws up his ass. You're going to cost him. You're going to accost him.
I'm not that type of person.
I am.
I respect people's physical boundaries.
I assume the worst in others.
You know.
Yeah.
He is cute.
He's adorable. He looks like Seal if he never got his ass beat.
He's got a job. Does he have a car?
Yes.
He has a credit card.
I never occurred to me to ask.
You got to find out about those things.
I don't know. I'm not getting an apartment with him tomorrow. I don't need to know about his credit score. I don't need details.
Have you seen those t-shirts that they sell, you know, to appeal to African-American women? It says, a man must have a job, a car, and a credit card. If not, go away.
Well, damn. I have a job and a credit card, but no car. So 2 out of 3, can't get no pussy out of here.
Well,
you're not really looking for pussy.
Every now and then.
Oh, come on.
Like when the moon is full and shit, you know,
you
like
smell blood.
Yeah, get me my red wings. I'm in.
What are we doing for Valentine's Day?
Anal.
I don't know.
What looks do you like clutch.
Should we go back to King Spa?
Oh, basically. By the way, I have so many straight friends who are women who fully enjoy going there to go there. And I'm like, I will never go with you because I will get raped. Like, I'm not trying to have sex in a steam room.
Yeah, you can't have sex there.
There's a security guard looking at your dick and says, don't let it get hard. I see it.
Because I'll cut it off.
I see it getting a little stiff.
Like, he's like, makes a little knife gesture. Like, get hard.
Snippy, snippy.
Okay. So no. You just chase people around.
We were having a really great time with our friend, Kirthy. We're sitting in one room. We're giggling. Mm. And this guy comes in, opens the door, and goes, quiet!
Just like that.
So you could fucking silence.
The thing about it, though, is he made it very dramatic before the words actually came out of his mouth. It was the breathing in and the hands starting in his chest and going up. Quiet!
He was like releasing some fucking wave to come at you and knock you out.
It was like Godzilla. I was like,
he's like Japanese Aquaman. Yeah.
And of course, we were very respectful.
Yes.
And you got quiet!
Quiet! So I said that to Mark all the time.
Yeah, okay. We giggled.
Quiet!
That's hilarious.
The best part, though, is we were in a sauna once, and then we were kind of like, it was me and Kirthy and Fausto, and then this one other woman, and then we were just kind of,
we were vibrating.
Because you could see, like, the room was small, so it really resonated.
Yeah.
And then she started doing, like, these things, you know, and speaking, and I was like, and I knew she was speaking in tongue, you know, I could tell. But, like, I didn't think these guys did. And so afterwards, like, oh, what was that? She's like, oh, you know, I was speaking in tongue, and that kind of thing.
I love the Lord.
You know, I wanted to say, I wanted to say, it was just like, well, in order for you to speak in tongue, somebody here has to translate it. And ain't nobody here going to translate that bullshit.
Basically.
So
God understands all prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Not speaking in tongue. They always have to have somebody there to.
Or else it's the devil.
Yeah, or else it's the devil.
Namo rengi kyo, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Buddhism.
Yes. Get that Buddhism.
Do you know what that means in English?
No idea.
I'm not going crazy.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not going crazy.
I am going crazy right now in this minute. How do you say that in Buddhism?
Welcome to Feast of Fun.
Basically.
Matt Brown, it's so good talking to you.
It's so nice being here. I love you so much. Y'all are sweeties. I enjoy being here every single time.
Please come back and let's talk about something a little lighter. Basic. Blackface.
We can talk about my asshole. That'll be more of like a light pink.
Wait, a little bit lighter?
That'll be more of a light pink.
You mean like Katy Perry's shoes?
We'll avoid the brown completely.
Okay. Now, you know, it's, I think it's very important to talk about these things. But also, too, it's just, you know, I don't want you to be like, okay, we have a black issue. Come black over. Friend. But they're very important. These things are very important, you know.
Rachel Hall over here to talk about the black stuff.
Let's just be real clear here. We talk about the black stuff even when you're not around.
Yes, that's true.
Especially behind your back.
Uh-huh. And mostly like, black stuff. That's mostly when it's
because I think you have a lot of interesting things to say about it.
As a sociology major.
And because I'm ready to beat up a lot of white people.
You got rage, honey.
Basically. Everyone wants their ass beat, and I'm the one. X is going to give it to you.
Rage?
You're so threatening, man.
I know, right?
Matt's like 150 pounds.
Basically.
Rage against the white machine.
He's got some ninja powers.
I don't know. What's that old Whitney Houston thing? I'm from Newark. I'll get somebody on Bobby. That's my line to that, okay? I'm from Newark. I'll get somebody on him.
Rest in peace, Whitney Houston.
Basically.
Have you seen the documentary yet?
Oh, yes.
Wow. Did it make you stop wanting to do crack cocaine?
It made me want to stop letting my entire family molest me, actually. That's what made me put my foot down.
Okay.
I was just like, Aunt Dee Dee, stop it.
I have just one regret in life is that I never had sex with Whitney Houston while high on crack.
Same, but I feel like I would have had a better chance with Bobby, because Whitney liked pussy. So, like, which, by the way, while we're on the topic of this, before we get out of here, why does everyone think that Whitney just completely stopped eating pussy after Robin went away? You think there was no other woman?
Oh, no. She was
her hairdresser said she would, she'd fuck anybody.
There you go.
You know, and that's, she's like, she was, I don't know if she was gay or lesbian, but there wasn't a person she, you know.
She was friendly.
I like that.
Me too.
It made me respect Whitney Houston 100 times more
after
seeing that.
She wanted to dance with somebody, not anyone in particular, just somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody who.
It should be, I want to dance with anybody.
But we all
somebody
know.
Somebody who.
But we all know how, like, the closet can be, you know, for some people can be debilitating. And I wonder if she was able to, like, live her authentic self, if she would have had a much happier experience.
She'd probably still be alive and wouldn't be on crap.
You know? Maybe.
Probably.
Maybe.
If she could just eat pussy in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you know what killed Whitney Houston? Those goddamn bathtubs at the stupid hotel.
She was so coked up, she couldn't feel the water boiling her.
They say she didn't have any coke in her system.
That's a lie. She fell asleep.
Tell you not to fall asleep in the
bathtub. It's online. It's like 42 pages. Spend a nice night with a bottle of wine and some Forensic Files.
I thought she was sober when she died.
No. She had everything in
her. Have you seen those bathtubs at the Beverly Hills Hotel?
They're deep.
They are like swimming pools.
They're deep.
You know, and I'm like, every time I sit in my shitty little bathtub, I just think to myself, thank God I'm not rich.
You can drown in 2 tablespoons of water.
You know, but it's much harder to drown
in
2 tablespoons.
Scott Peterson. Remember the guy in Bolingbrook who, like, drowned 3 of his wives?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then you can drown in 2 tablespoons of water.
Well, then what did he do with their bodies? I think he put one of them in, like, an acid.
Yeah, one of them he put in a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love Forensic Files. I love watching white people get locked up. Mm. I love any sort of crime. Oh, I'm all about it. Prison.
Oh, really?
It. Oh, yeah. Lock up Raw. And they have the whole gay unit. Oh, yeah.
They have a gay unit?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure, I'm in.
What, they have a unit where everybody in there is gay?
Yeah, 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 yeah. And, like, they have, like, fucking prison husbands and shit, and they tweeze their eyebrows together. It's, like, very romantic.
I'll have to catch that.
Happy Valentine's Day.
That's what you guys can watch together. You guys don't go out. You just come home and watch, like, the gay Rikers episode of Lock Up and eat ice cream together.
Okay.
I like that.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
It'd be very homosexual.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.